Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, and there's a text 9. I'm going to keep on reading because there are no purports. One king, so this is all about the descent of the Ganges, because I don't think you've had class, so you may not know what this is all about by now. The one king, he was performing a sacrifice, and the horse wandered away, and it wandered into the lower regions where Lord Kapila Dev was meditating, and he sent his 60,000 sons in order to find the horse. So they dug into the earth, obviously not the earth that we think about, and they wound up in some region where Kapila Dev was sitting there meditating, and they saw the horse next to him, and next to Kapila Dev was the horse that was meant for the sacrifice. And so they assumed that Kapila Dev had stolen the horse, as if Kapila Dev had nothing more to do than steal a horse from someone. Anyhow, they became angry and they lifted their weapons up. They were going to kill Kapila Dev, which is not a very good idea. Try to kill God. No one has been able to do it so far. So anyhow, they lifted the weapons up, they rushed towards him, and their weapons, by their anger, they burnt themselves to ashes. So 60,000 Kshatriya bodies turned into ashes, a lot of ash. In any case, it was rather disappointing for the king. He sent his other son, found out there was all ash everywhere. And Kapila Dev told him that the only way of saving their souls is to bring the Ganges there to be purified. So for many generations, they tried to bring the Ganges there by the generation after generation doing austerity, and no one was able to do it until Angsumam Abhagirath was able to get the Ganges to agree to come down, but the Ganges said, I can't do it, because if I come down to the earth, and this is many years ago, before Kali Yuga, that's probably why the Ganges said, if I do that, then all these sinful people will bathe in my waters, and I'll become contaminated. And so the idea was that Bhagirath told Ganges, don't worry about it, because saintly people will bathe in your water and they'll purify it. Because nowadays, imagine poor Ganges, where are the saintly people who are bathing the Ganges to purify it? There's certainly a lot of sinful people bathing in the Ganges, throwing things into the Ganges. Not exactly healthy condition for the Ganges. So this is King Bhagirath. He did more austerity, and he wants Lord Shiva to come and stop the Ganges from hitting the earth and piercing through it into the nether regions. It's bad enough to be on this planet when all these sinful people are there, but what to speak of the nether regions, like in hell, for instance. People there are in a worse condition than we are, if you can imagine it. So now we'll keep on reading. King Bhagirath satisfied Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is coming, and Bhagirath is talking to Lord Shiva. So these are not ordinary persons, ordinary devotees who can actually approach Lord Shiva and talk to him. When King Bhagirath approached Lord Shiva and requested him to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges, Lord Shiva accepted the proposal by saying, should be tatastu, what does it say here? Let it be. What does it say? Oh, tata. Tata, just tata is enough to let it be. Tata iti, tateti. So if you want to tell someone, it's all right, just say, tateti, and everything's all right. You agree. Then with great attention, he satisfied the, he sustained the Ganges on his head, for the water of the Ganges is purifying, having emanated from the toes of Lord Vishnu. So the Ganges we have is not only coming from the toe of Lord Vishnu, but it's also coming through the hair of Lord Shiva. The great and saintly King Bhagirath brought the Ganges, which can deliver all fallen souls to that place on earth where the bodies of his forefathers lay burned to ashes. Let's see, what are they using for earth here? Just say yatra. Swapur Purna. You know, Prabhupada doesn't get into these things because they're probably just too controversial for our present society. Because the cosmology in the Bhagavatam is quite a bit different from the cosmology of so-called scientists. And if Prabhupada got into that, then people wouldn't understand about Krishna. We wouldn't be discussing. We already have a tendency to debate and fight and get distracted. What to speak of something other than whether the sun is closer to the moon? Even that the devotees don't talk about. It's just too esoteric. We have enough things to argue about. But if we were talking about whether the earth is flat or whether the earth is round, a globe, Prabhupada generally didn't get into those things because it's a distraction. Because whether the earth is round or it's flat makes no difference. We still have to chant Hare Krishna. Whether we're on a flat earth or a round earth, it's all the same. The devotee, at least we're on this planet. Bhagirath mounted a swift chariot and drove before Mother Ganges, who followed him, purifying many countries. What is the word? Desha, which is places. Till they reached the ashes of Bhagirath's forefathers, the sons of Sagara, who were thus sprinkled with water from the Ganges. So we have to remember that in order to get to where the horse was, they had to dig into the earth. So obviously, and they went quite far down. I think they even got near the elephants that are supposedly holding up the earth. Now, no one's going to believe these things. No common person will believe any of these things, that there are elephants holding up earth. Did I get four elephants in four quarters of the universe? What they're actually holding up is Bhumandala. But what kind of elephant can hold up Bhumandala as it's described? Anyhow, and they found a horse there with Kapila Dev, and now the Ganges is going there. And he's riding a chariot. He doesn't even have a car. He has to go by chariot. And here's text 12. Yaj jala sparsha matrena brahmadanda hatapi sagaratmaja divyam sagaratmaja divyam jagmu kevalam deha basmavi yajjala sparshamatrena brahmadanda hata api sagaratmaja divyam jagmu kevalam deha basmavi.
Yeah,
matrena anadanda hatapi sagara majati vyam jagmu kevlam deha basmabhi yajala sparsha matrena Ramadanda hatapi Sagara madati vyam jagmu Kevalam deha basmabhi Yajjala sparsha matrena Ramadanda hatapi Sagarat majadivyam jagmu kevalam deha basmabhi. Ladies. Yajjala sparsha matrena Brahmadanda hatapi Sagarat majadivyam jagmu Kevalam deha basmabhi. Actually, it's even allowed that more than one lady is actually able to chant. There's no. Okay. Yajjala sparsha matrena. Ramadanda hatapi Sagaratma jadivyam jagmu Kevalam deha basmabhi Yat jala Whose water? Sparshamatrena Simply by touching Ramadanda hata Those who are condemned to for offending Brahma. Let's read that again. Those who are condemned for offending Brahma, the self. Api, although. Sagara Atmaja. The sons of Sagara, Divam, to the heavenly planets, Jagmu, went, Kevalam, only, Deha Basmabhi, by the remaining ashes of their burnt bodies. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because the sons of Sargamuni Maharaj had offended a great personality, the heat of their bodies had increased, and they were burnt to ashes. But simply by being sprinkled with water from the Ganges, all of them became eligible to go to the heavenly planets. What then is to be said of those who use the water of Mother Ganges to worship her. Purport. Mother Ganges is worshipped by the water of the Ganges. A devotee takes a little water from the Ganges and offers it back to the Ganges. When the devotee takes the water, Mother Ganges does not lose anything. And when the water is offered back, Mother Ganges does not increase. But in this way, the worshipper of the Ganges is benefited. Similarly, a devotee of the Lord offers the Lord patram, pushpam, palam, doyam, a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, in great devotion. But everything, including the leaf, flower, fruit, and water, belong to the Lord, and therefore there is nothing to renounce or to accept. One must simply take advantage of the bhakti process, because by following the process, one does not lose anything, one gains the favor of the Supreme Person. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimadhi Bhakti Vranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Vacharane nirvishesha shunyavadi paskyadyade siddharna. Two significant points here are, one is about offending devotees. Now, Kapila Muni is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the sons of Sagara obviously went through great effort to dig into the earth for a long distance, which I can't remember exactly how long it took them, but they dug quite deeply into the earth to come to the place where the horse was. Now, how the horse got there without having to dig into the earth, I don't know. And how Kapila Dev, why he was sitting there, I also don't know. In any case, it took them a great effort, and there were 60,000 of them in some yuga, which yuga I don't know, but in previous yugas, people were much bigger than they are now. When Mutchakunda, who I assume came from, well, he came from another yuga, it was probably Satya Yuga. When he was in the cave and Krishna came with Kalyavana, and kicked sleeping Mutchakunda, Mutchakunda burned him to ashes with his glance because he was woken up untimely. And then, after offering prayers to Lord Krishna and realizing that Krishna was the one that Garga Muni had said would appear in the end of Dwarpa Yuga, would be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he decided to leave his cave and go to the north in order to meditate for the rest of his life. But when he got out of the cave, he saw all the bushes, all the trees there, this is at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, were like little bushes, which means he was quite large. Therefore he walked until he got, I believe, to Badrik Ashram. In any case, our conception of what the world is and how things go on is, according to the Bhagavatam, we have rather narrow view of reality. Even this place where we're living on, we don't really know how it works very well, how the different ages, there are different sizes of the living of the human beings, they have different lifespans, etc., etc. And here are the sons of Sagara, who are undoubtedly huge kshatriyas, 60,000 of them, got burnt to ashes just by offending a devotee. So this is a lesson for us. Of course, we're not so powerful. If we offend a devotee, maybe we break out with some hives or something. We generally don't get such a quick reaction because we don't have such power to offend either. Even when we get angry at someone, our anger is it's Kali Yuga anger. It doesn't even raise our temperature. From previous times, when people got angry, they really got angry. And if their anger was offending a devotee, then it was enough heat that their bodies were burned to ashes. Now we ourselves we shouldn't think that in Kali Yuga we can get away with offending devotees and everything's going to be all right, because no one is, that we know of, has ever been burnt to ashes by offending a devotee. But they've gotten into a lot of trouble. We have Ramachandra Khan, who offended Haridas Thakur and successfully went on to offend Lord Nityananda. Now, he didn't burn to ashes, but he was arrested by his associate, a Muslim taxpayer. A cow was killed in the very place where he had dug up the earth, where Lord Nityananda's lotus feet had touched, and had a servant throw that earth outside. And in the very place, a cow was slaughtered, and the Muslim cooked it for 3 days. His whole Ramachandra Khan's family was arrested, and the whole village was where he lived was destroyed. Of course,
these are,
and that's Kali Yuga. Reactions will be there. They may not be as in the same extent that they are in other yugas, at least so obvious or evident. Because in every yuga, there are also different ways that karma works. For instance, in Kali Yuga, if you think of something good, a good activity, you get credit for it. And if you think of something bad, a sinful activity, you don't get the reactions for it. But even in Dwarpa Yuga, what to speak of Treta Yuga or Satya Yuga, if you think of something good, you might get credit for it. But if you think of something bad, you'll actually get the reactions for it. People's minds were obviously much more controlled and disciplined, and people, 99% of the people were in ignorance. Therefore, the laws of karma work differently in order to adjust according to the time, place, and circumstance. In any case, if one thinks of serving a devotee in this age, even thinks of devotional service, which means serving a devotee. There's no such thing as devotional service without serving devotees. We can't have devotional service unless you're a mouse. As the story goes, there was a temple which was lit by candles, and one candle was about to go out, but one mouse, his tail caught on fire, and his tail lit the candle that went out, and he got the credit for lighting a candle in the temple, the mouse. And because of that pious credit, he went back to Godhead. Now, we should not become envious of the mouse and wish we had a tail. So at least we do that service and go back to Godhead. No, it's just, these are extreme cases. We don't know what the mouse was in his last lifetime. He undoubtedly wasn't an ordinary mouse whose tail caught on fire and got the pious credit for lighting a candle in the temple, and therefore he was eligible to go back to Godhead. He was probably a very great devotee in his previous lifetime. He just needed one more pious credit before he could go back to Godhead. And therefore he got that by lighting the candle, and therefore became eligible. Otherwise we think it doesn't work. I've been lighting so many candles. I'm still in the same miserable state I was before I lit the candle. No one's coming to take me back to Godhead. No, we should understand. These things are given to us, these examples, whether it's Sagara, son, Atmaja, the sons of Sagara, or it's this mouse, so that we can become either cautious about offending devotees or enthusiastic about rendering service. Because even though we may light a candle, we may think it's insignificant, which is part of the process problem. As it mentions here that this Ganges washed over the ashes of Sagara's sons, and they went to the heavenly planets. Now people every day probably, maybe even millions of people every day bathe in the Ganges, and I doubt whether any of them are going to, some of them are going, all of them I should say, whether all of them are going to the heavenly planets just by bathing in the Ganges. And why do I say that? Because that also generally requires some faith. Because before the Ganges comes to the earth, what's the name? Mandakini. The Mandakini Ganges is on the heavenly planets. When Trivikram's foot pierced the coverings of the universe, and the causal ocean leaked into the very core of our universe, which is where we're living. Just to give you an idea of how big Trivikram's toe must have been. If you take one point, one little dot, and you draw a line 30 or 40 kilometers away from that one little dot, the amount of the dot on the page, that one little dot is the inside where we're living, the inside of the Earth, of the universe. I think it's around 4 billion miles across. And that distance between that one little dot and 40 kilometers away, that's the coverings of the universe. So Trivikram's lotus foot, nail of it, it must have a really big nail, pierced through that all those coverings, and so the Gandhis came through into the universe through those coverings and fell onto the heavenly planets. Now, we know from the history that many years ago that when Narada Muni was passing by the Ganges, there were two sons of Kuvera, Nalakuvara and Manigriva. They were bathing the Ganges naked with some heavenly ladies who were also naked. And they were enjoying in the Ganges, intoxicated. That even the heavenly planets, people get intoxicated, but I think they get intoxicated with soma rasa, which is not exactly like going to your neighbor liquor store and getting alcohol. If you're going to get intoxicated, getting intoxicated in soma rasa is your best bet, if you can get any. In any case, they were intoxicated, enjoying the Ganges, and Narada Muni came by. They were already in the heavenly planets, and they got cursed to become trees on this planet. Obviously, they didn't say, wait a second. The sons of Sagara, they tried to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They were burnt to ashes. And just by being in the Ganges, they became purified, and they got here to the heavenly planets. Now we're in the heavenly planets, we're bathing in the Ganges, and now you've cursed us and we're going to become trees. Something's wrong here. How is it possible that we're in the Ganges and we're actually going to become trees? And while people were in this earth, on the earthly planet, and they were cursed to become ashes, but then by it being in the Ganges, they came to here, to the heavenly planets. So what's the difference? Why didn't the Ganges protect us in the heavenly planets? Well, there's a question of consciousness. It's the difference in consciousness. What we're doing is not only what we're doing, but the consciousness in which we do it in. Someone could do the same thing and get a completely different reaction. Like Arjuna was killing people on the Battle of Kurukshetra. Now, generally speaking, we find out that even if you do your duty as a Kshatriya, we'll find out in King Prachinabharata, which we've gone through already. He was a king in Satyuga, and he was doing his duty of sacrifice. And in sacrifice, you're obliged to kill animals. Now, generally speaking, in Satyuga, they had Brahmins who actually knew how to chant the mantras. And they bring the animal back to life. That was what the purpose of the sacrifice of the cow or the bull or the horse would be. Because if you're going to spend all this money on sacrifice, then you want to make sure that the Brahmins know what they're doing. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time. like nowadays we have these fire sacrifices and we throw things into the fire, we chant some mantras, but nothing really happens. I don't even think we could sacrifice a bird or a squirrel, we get the reactions for, because we couldn't bring the poor bird back to life, because our mantras are pretty ineffective. But when they did a sacrifice for the Asvamedha sacrifice or the Gomedha sacrifice, they were not spending just a few dollars, you know, 50 euros for the sacrifice. They were spending hundreds of millions of dollars for a sacrifice, because the sacrificial altar was, even in Dwarpa Yuga, was made out of gold. King Yudhisthira, when he was going to perform the Asvamedha Yajna, to atone for the killing of the Kshatriyas on the Battle of Kurukshetra, he had Arjuna go to a place in the Himalayas where one king had a mountain of gold. We may believe this, we may not believe it, but anyhow, this is what the Bhagavatam says. And he used to invite the Brahmins to come by, and the Brahmins would be given plates and cups made out of gold to eat from after the sacrifice. But the Brahmins were so renounced that they didn't even bother bringing the gold back with them. They just left it all there. Because after all, even if you have gold, what are you going to buy in Satyuga? There's nothing to buy. So they just left all the gold there, and Arjuna, known as Dhananjaya, he went and collected the gold so that Maharaj Yudhisthira could utilize it for the sacrifice. So it wasn't ordinary sacrifices like we have. They had expert Brahmins that could bring the cow and the bull and the horse back to life. And they had to spend millions and millions of equivalent dollars, our dollar, in order to perform the sacrifice with ghee and gold and grains and all the different awards that they give to the Brahmins, awards they give to everyone, the gifts they give to everyone who comes. Therefore, they had to make sure the Brahmins were qualified. Otherwise, one little mistake in the sacrifice and the whole thing is ruined. This, during the long, long sacrifice that was performed by one king, the king, in order to produce a demon to kill Krishna. The Brahmin, he chanted one syllable after 3 days of chanting mantras the whole day in order to perform the sacrifice. He chanted one syllable wrong, and it was the wrong syllable. It was the wrong word. And therefore, instead of getting a demon who would be the enemy of Indra, he got a demon who is Indra's enemy. In other words, he wanted to kill Indra, but instead of getting a demon who would kill Indra, he got a demon whose enemy was Indra. Instead of one syllable, ah, instead of ah, he pronounced it ah. You notice the difference? But they did. Laws of nature noticed the difference instead of ah, ah. And therefore he got a demon, Vritrasura, who was, instead of being Indra's enemy, Indra was his enemy. And so Indra killed him instead of him killing Indra. So such were the sacrifices. Now, in this particular instance, or in every instance, the consciousness of the people who are performing sacrifice, the way they pronounce things is important, but also the consciousness in which we do things is important. that if we perform an activity with a certain consciousness, then we'll also get the reactions for that consciousness. And especially for the devotees, if we do something with faith in Krishna, if we expect Krishna is going to reciprocate with us, or we're going to get a certain result, then Krishna can do it. Because everything is based on Krishna. Now, I emphasize this chanting of the long or short syllable after 3 days of chanting mantras, but Krishna was simply fulfilling the person's desire. In other words, they had such expert sacrificial performances that Krishna, through the material nature, he seems, all right, if you want someone who's Krishna and Indra's enemy, I'll do that. But you're asking me to create someone whose enemy is Indra. So, all right, I just have to go. That's what you asked for. That's what we give you. Similarly, if we believe in Krishna and we ask him for something, we say Hare Krishna, and we actually want him to engage us in his loving service, then he'll do that. And if we chant Hare Krishna in the mood, my dear Lord, please don't reveal yourself to me because I have too many other plans you'll spoil if you do that. The Krishna says, fine, no problem. I got a lot of other things to do than to reveal myself to you. So Krishna reciprocates according to what we want. Now, of course, we don't know what we want. We want so many things. And maybe one of those things is that we want to become Krishna conscious. But that's not possible. We can't want to become Krishna conscious and at the same time want to become Krishna. It just doesn't work. Therefore, Krishna sees we're a little sincere, hopefully, and therefore he reveals himself a little bit. If we make an effort to chant Hare Krishna sincerely, then Krishna will actually reveal himself to us a little bit. Now, we're trying to become Krishna conscious, and we're trying to realize the person who's the source of all material and spiritual worlds. It's not exactly, Krishna is not, it's not exactly an insignificant thing to realize Krishna. There's nothing greater than that. And therefore, even if Krishna reveals himself to us minutely, that's a great wonder. That's great advancement. And we should try to understand that in the future, when we find out what Krishna consciousness actually is, we'll wonder how much Maya we could ever have been in. That anyone who realizes Krishna, they can never not remember Krishna. Now Kamsa, he had Krishna personally on his chest, beating on him. Not just on his chest, you know, sitting on his chest or falling asleep on it. He had him beating, Krishna was beating him on the chest. And yet Kamsa didn't really understand Krishna. As Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha also were killed by Krishna, they had his personal darshan, but they didn't realize Krishna because Krishna was covered by his illusory energy. And therefore they could not actually understand who Krishna was. Just like we're here in the temple and the Panchatattva is here. Now we may think that they're deities, they're statues, but they're actually directly Krishna himself and his associates. And they'll also reveal themselves to us in our service according to our faith. Now, of course, we can't have faith if we're covered. Because if we're covered by the illusory energy, we don't have faith because we don't perceive things as they actually are. And therefore, what's the solution? If we don't believe that Krishna is God, or we only have a limited experience of what it means that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have to deal with the deities, and we think they're, we may have different conceptions of them, well then one has to serve his devotee. One has to have faith in his devotee that if I follow his directions or their directions, then the result will be, if I believe in them, then Krishna will reveal himself to me. Because I've heard that if I offer, even if I offer incense and I try to do it regularly and I try to do it with some devotion, and even though I haven't realized, and Krishna may see, well, this devotee is sincere, he's trying to understand me, and therefore I'll reveal myself to him. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. I'll give him more intelligence. And it's that connection with Krishna, then we suddenly realize that he's there. They're not just statues. Or that any kind of service we're doing with devotion is not ordinary. That Krishna will reciprocate with us according to our sincerity. Therefore, the devotees try to at least be steady in their service and try to put themselves in situations sometimes where they have to rely upon Krishna. Just like, for instance, to get up on time to come to Mangalarti, we have to rely upon Krishna. Krishna has to, we have to wake up, which means the super soul has to take us from deep sleep into a state of consciousness where we could actually be eligible to get up and take a shower and come to Mangalarti. So it may, we may not realize we're relying upon the super soul, but we are. We have to agree to the super soul's, to Rupa Goswami's instruction that we get up early in the morning and come to Mangalarti. So when Krishna sees we're in Mangalarti, he knows it's because we're have agreed to accept the instructions of Krishna's representative and we're coming to Mangalarti, so therefore he sees we're sincere. And he gives us a chance to chant Mangalarti, the prayers and the mantras of Mangalarti, and then he sees we're even more sincere if we bother paying attention to what we're chanting. Not that this is the limit, I came to Mangalarti, I'm not doing anything more, I'll stand here half asleep. Or now's the time where I can think about all the things I'm going to do to the day, for the, during the day, etc., etc. All the problems I had last night, all the problems I'm probably going to have today. Now, if we actually try to chant Mangalarti nicely and with devotion, then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to do it. We can't do anything without Krishna. And therefore, at every moment, Krishna is noting our sincerity. Either we're trying to do things nicely for him, and therefore he reciprocates by giving us more and more intelligence how to do it nicely for him, or we're trying to go away from him. Oh, Krishna, I don't want to think about you. Let me think about so many other things. Therefore, by the mercy of our gurus, by the mercy of our acharyas, coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're given this program and we're trying to develop faith. We're trying to develop a desire to do it nicely, which will lead to faith. Faith doesn't mean blind faith. It means Shraddha Sabde Vishvasakari Sudrida Nischai Krishna Bhakti Kaya Savakamra Kritaha. Faith, experience that when I do things well, when I pay attention and I do things carefully in Krishna's service, then Krishna reciprocates with me and gradually reveals himself to me. Gives me intelligence, gives me experience in Krishna consciousness. And with that experience called faith, therefore I try to find out more what I can do better so I can get Krishna will be pleased with me and reveal himself to me even more. And that way I make progress in Krishna's service. And sometimes we're put in a position, it appears that Krishna's far away, he's not reciprocating with me, he doesn't love me, I must be the worst rascal, and therefore nothing's going my way, everything's wrong, I might as well quit Krishna consciousness and take shelter of my mother somewhere. Mommy. No, Krishna is there, but sometimes he's going to put us into, test us, because that's what our karma is. We were supposed to be tested. Krishna will only give us a little test, or we deserve a much bigger test, but that's one of the obstacles we have, that we are attached to some material conception of life, some material activity, some material consciousness, we're attached to it, we're faced with it, and we chant Hare Krishna, and Krishna doesn't immediately take it away. And we think Krishna is worthless, useless. Maybe my mother will help me take it away. Or if I go out and go to get a job, that will protect me. So Krishna tests us, see how sincere we are, how much we're really willing to take shelter of him. And when we're actually remain fixed in Krishna's service, in spite of the obstacles, then Krishna sees we're sincere. And therefore he bestows his mercy upon us. So Prabhupada said, an actual pure devotee is an experienced devotee. So we shouldn't expect everything is going to go as we plan, and Krishna is supposed to reciprocate with us exactly as we've figured it out, according to my plan. Krishna doesn't necessarily feel obliged to follow our plan. But if we make a plan, we do it, and we remain in Krishna's service, then even if our plan goes wrong, but if we remain in Krishna consciousness, in spite of the obstacles in our plans, then or in anything that we're doing, whether it's our plans or someone else's plan, if we remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will become pleased with us and will become Krishna conscious. By his mercy, he'll reveal himself to us, and that will be the success of our activity. Not whether our plan is fulfilled or not. It's whether Krishna reveals himself to us due to our sincerity. So similarly, we have Sagara's Muni's sons, the burnt ashes, the Ganges washing over them, they're going to the heavenly planets, and we can go to the Ganges, and if we are in Krishna's service, we're hearing about Krishna consciousness, and with reverence we take a drop of water on our head from the Ganges, then the result is that we'll actually feel great ecstasy because of our faith and devotion. That we'll experience the power of the Ganges. Just like to go to Radhakund, doesn't require that we dive into Radhakund and splash around to get Srimati Radharani's mercy. If we just take one drop and put it on our head with devotion, then with faith in Srimati Radharani and the potency of the Radhakund water, then that drop will reveal itself to us. Because the Radhakund water is none different from Srimati Radharani. But if we think, oh, it's just a drop of water, or maybe I get a little pious activity, whatever, that's what we'll get, whatever we're thinking, whatever we're expecting. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So just like in India, we have many people going to Rishikesh and Haridwar. I know personally people in India, they have faith in Ganga, like if they, you know, take some bath or... So they have some faith in Ganga, but at the same time, they may be doing some sinful activities. So are they eligible to go to heavenly planets?
No, they won't go to... If they're doing sinful activities? I don't know. I'm not Yamaraj, so I can't tell you exactly. Faith, they may have some faith in Ganges, undoubtedly, because they're bathing in the Ganges. But faith for what? In other words, if you're doing sinful activities, it means you must be in ignorance. Because only if you're in ignorance, you do sinful activities. And if you're in ignorance, then how much faith can you have in the Ganges? They might have some faith because they heard from their grandmother some story about how much pious credit they get from bathing the Ganges. How that, you know, they got wealth and health and this. So they get some credit for that. But they also get the sinful reactions for their sinful activities. So you can't go into the heavenly planets, you have to be in the mode of goodness. So maybe they'll be put in a situation where they'll be purified of their sinful activities, and afterwards they may get some credit. I don't know what their consciousness is. It depends how many sinful activities they're doing and what their conception of the Ganges are. So that's all balanced by the super soul through his agents such as Yamaraj. But I can't tell. But it's not a good... But undoubtedly, they've taken birth in a pious land like India because they have an opportunity to bathe in the Ganges. So they must have done many pious credits in their last lifetime to get such an opportunity. But many people don't take it seriously. They take birth in a place like India and then they study to go to the West. IT. Become an IT expert or something. and get a good job in the West, they don't realize their opportunity for spiritual opportunities in India. Therefore, they come to the West seeking some material advantage sometimes. But that's Kali Yuga. You know what to say. Prabhupada gives the example that you're living right next to the Ganges and you go on pilgrimage. 3,000 kilometers away, you go on pilgrimage. You're living right next to the Ganges. So that's Kali Yuga, due to lack of knowledge. People don't understand the great opportunities to take birth in India.
But also sometimes in Bhagavatam we have so many examples of anything like, oh, he was a very sinful person and he took prasad and he went back to Godhead.
No, that's not. We should, as it says, Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, at the end of the chapter where all these different amazing things are explained, if you clap your hands before the deity, the sinful reactions all fly away, just like if you clap your hands before a tree, all the birds fly away from the tree. And Prabhupada explains at the end of the chapter that these results may be there for some very special people, but we shouldn't expect that every time we clap our hands, all the sinful reactions are going to fly away. These are given to us to encourage us to perform these activities, not that every time everyone gets the equal result. It depends on our consciousness. As I said, Arjuna was killing literally millions of people on the battlefield, but because he was in pure Krishna consciousness, he went back to the spiritual world. For him, it was devotional activity. But for others who are killing people on the battlefield, they may go to hell for it, because it's not a spiritual activity, and they're not in spiritual consciousness. Yes.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class. You are speaking about offending devotees, and nowadays people are so easily offended. And I was wondering, it is safe just to turn our face away and pretending we are not seeing these things and not to tell them? Or,
well, better we get. I mean, that will only work to a certain extent. Of course, rather than defend the devotees, you know, better to avoid them. But then we're offending them within our mind only. So we have to correct our own mentality. Better to offend them just... There are three different stages of offense: within the mind, with words, or with the body. Better we offend just within the mind rather than with our words or with the physical. But we have to correct our minds also.
Yeah, because I don't know, if we don't say things that are accumulating, and in some point when, I don't know, we are weak or something, we...
Yes, so therefore we have to attend class, we have to understand the philosophy, we have to practice it. And hopefully by Krishna's mercy, gradually realizations will be given to us. We'll get the realization and we'll be able to see everyone as at least theoretically, as a spirit soul, just like I am, and that what they're doing externally, through the modes of material nature perhaps, or even through devotional service, is not their activities, it's the activities of Krishna. And that my service to everyone, if I can accept it, is to help everyone become Krishna's devotee, whatever I can do, that I'm servant of everyone. If I accept that, then I won't offend anyone. And if I don't accept that, then I'll wind up offending people.
Thank you.
Kuala Grandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.